listening to WNHN LP 94.7 and WNHNFM.org. This is Statehouse Watch Radio, and I'm Maggie Fogarty with the American Friends Service Committee. This is the first Statehouse Watch Radio program since the retirement of our dear friend Arnie Alpert, who after nearly four decades of work with the AFSC retired on Friday, June 26th. It is also the last program of the 2020 legislative session, which has surely been a wild ride. I was able to sit down with Arnie for a little while last week as he was wrapping up his work. And so we'll hear today a conversation with him, some reflections about the work for movement building for peace and justice in New Hampshire. And he's paired that with a number of wonderful songs that have been inspirations for him and a way of telling some of the movement stories. But first, I want to let people know or remind listeners where we are in the process. The House and the Senate will be wrapping up their legislative business for the most part this week with a final session day on Tuesday, June 30th. The Senate will meet on Monday today, if you're listening live, June 29th. They will meet again in the House chambers to address a few more bills. And then all of that goes to the House, which will meet again at the Whittemore Center on June 30th, where they will primarily be voting to concur or not concur with the work that the Senate has done. Quick civics lesson, the concurrence votes do not require a two-thirds majority, as other work would do now in this suspension of the rules. There won't be as many opportunities for kind of a hyper-partisan disruption of the work that needs to get done before the end of the session. So we will be watching that closely. Our friends at Raise Up New Hampshire will be present with messages in support of a bill that would raise the minimum wage, reestablish and raise the minimum wage in New Hampshire to $12, as well as improve wages for tipped workers, and also be bringing messages of the importance of finalizing a fair contract with our state employees. So those issues are of particular concern to us, but we're also paying attention to voting rights, to criminal justice reform, and other investments of public funds into the infrastructure that we need. The governor is expected to continue to make announcements about how the state is responding to the COVID-19 situation, and as well as the distribution of CARES Act funds and other measures. People who want to pay close attention to that can go to the GOFER website. That's the Government Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery. You can keep track of the meetings and the progress of the Legislative Advisory Group and the Stakeholder Advisory Group at gopher.nh.gov. And then we'll also be following closely the work of a new commission. It's the Commission on Law Enforcement Accountability, Community, and Transparency, that had some initial meetings last week and will continue to meet during a 45-day charge. And those developments, including how to access those meetings, can be found at governor.nh.gov. So there will be a lot going on. This, again, will be our last radio show of the session, but readers of the Statehouse Watch newsletter will get a detailed accounting of how the session was completed, the proposals that were included in various omnibus bills, whether they pass or not. And then, of course, we'll have to pay attention to whether Governor Sununu pulls out his veto pen. So we'll keep you apprised of all of that via our newsletter. Now, I'd like to bring us a conversation that I had with my friend and coworker Arnie Alpert last week, reflecting on his really extraordinary work with AFSC and with many, many partners throughout the state and really throughout the country to bring more justice and more peace to our community. So welcome, Arnie Alpert.
Hi, Maggie Fogarty.
So in these last busy days with the AFSC, before you step into a healthy, happy retirement, thank you for setting aside some time to share some stories. I'd like to start if you don't mind, with you talking about how you got to New Hampshire and how you first found the American Friends Service Committee.
Well, it's an interesting story, Maggie, because my very first trip to Concord, New Hampshire ever was in the back of a National Guard Army truck after being arrested as one of more than 1,000 people who were charged with criminal trespassing for occupying the construction site of the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant on May 1, 1977. And after being booked at the National Guard Armory in Portsmouth, we were whisked off to, I think, 5 or 6 different other armories because the state needed that much space to house us all. So I was part of a group that was sent to the armory in Concord, New Hampshire, and that's how I got to Concord.
They just treated you so well that you said, I'm going to stick around.
Well, it was. I will say that we were housed there, jailed there for basically 2 full weeks. And during that period of time, I had a great opportunity to meet lots of other activists from different places and from different generations and reflect on my own role. I was finishing up my senior year of college at the time. And after I graduated, I continued to be involved in what we call the No Nukes Movement. A year and a half or so later, I moved to Portsmouth, New Hampshire to become part of the Office Collective for the Clamshell Alliance, which was the group that was behind these demonstrations. And then a few years after that, in 1981, I joined the staff at the American Friends Service Committee as the New Hampshire Program Coordinator.
And I think you've said to me before that many of those friendships that you made organizing around Seabrook continued to be partners in related and interconnected work over the coming decades. Is that true?
It's interesting. As I reflect back on that work, Maggie, I do think it's important to understand that the No Nukes move, and particularly as embodied by the Clamshell Alliance, should not be thought of as primarily an environmental movement, although it was that. And it wasn't even just an anti-nuclear movement, but it was also a movement that was about democracy. It was about a community being able to determine its own destiny rather than being bullied by a giant corporation housed somewhere else and bullied by a governor who really had no interest in what the local community wanted. And it was a movement that was a movement in recognition that this was land that had originally been a Native American burial site. So it was in solidarity with Native Americans and their historic struggles against exploitation. It was part of a global movement about nuclear and environmental hazards that included people resisting nuclear plants in the Philippines and included the fact that our pro-nuclear governor wanted to make deals with the apartheid regime in South Africa to secure a source of uranium to fuel a nuclear plant here. So we were in solidarity with movements of liberation in South Africa. And that it also was if not exactly a pioneer, a landmark example of the use of nonviolent direct action in a particular form. And the model that was employed by the Clamshell Alliance spread from Seabrook to anti-nuclear movements, but then other movements across the country and to some extent across the world. And a great way to tell that story, Maggie, is with a song that our friend Charlie King wrote and really sang for the first time at the Seabrook occupation in 1977. The song is Acres of Clams.
I've lived all my life in this country. I love every flower and tree. I expect to live here till I'm 90. It's the nukes that must go and not me. It's the nukes that must go and not me, my friends. The nukes that must go and not me. I expect to live here till I'm 90. It's the nukes that must go and not me. I've swallowed enough radiation. It's time I was standing my ground. So I'm joining that grand occupation with shutting that power plant down. We're shutting that power plant down, my friends. We're shutting that power plant down. I'm joining that grand occupation. guess these shams. So I sing all my happy condition, surrounded by acres of land. Surrounded by acres of land, my friend, surrounded by acres of land. So let's sing of our happy condition, surrounded by acres of land.
Just beautiful. And the element of people singing along with Charlie King just conveys the movement spirit that that song probably, you know, really reflects.
It did. And actually, Charlie was one of the people who was in the Concord National Guard Armory. So we were certainly singing there. And he met other musicians through that movement and formed a group called Bright Morning Star, created the People's Music Network, now called the People's Music Network for Songs of Freedom and Struggle. And that continues. So that's an interesting thing. Again, the way these movements grow, the way a lot of it is built on relationships, the way it's not about single issues, it's about values, and it's about people who find ways time after time, year after year, generation after generation, to come together to stand up or sit down or speak up and speak out for the changes that are needed.
That's right. So thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people are impacted by these movement moments.
Right. Now, one of the interesting things about the clamshell, Maggie, is that participants, we had 1,415 people who were arrested at Seabrook on May 1, 1977. All of us were members of small affinity groups. Mm-hmm. Everyone had participated in a nonviolent action training session, had agreed to abide by a certain set of guidelines for how we were going to act together. So we knew, in a sense, what we could expect from each other. And that's how you were able to have a tremendous amount of discipline and trust across a group of thousands of people, most of whom had never met each other before. Mm. So that was remarkable, but that was apparent from anybody who was watching what took place there. And it was through that experience that one of the decisions I made was to continue to get more deeply involved in the process of nonviolent action training. So that was one of the first things that I did after that Seabrook occupation. And I continued to do that with initially the Clamshell Alliance, but then eventually after I joined the American Friends Service Committee, being involved with helping people prepare for a variety of different expressions of active nonviolence has been part of my work all along, most recently training people to be what we call peacekeepers in demonstrations in support of the Black Lives Matter movement.
That's really impressive. So you're touching on the teaching of tactics and strategy. I'm also struck by some of your introductory remarks about how this particular campaign focused on issues of racial justice, economic justice, nonviolence, environmental justice, I'm probably even missing militarism.
And another interesting thing about it, Maggie, was that the Clamshell Alliance was very explicit in its feminist orientation. And part of that was expressed through the horizontal nature of the way the organization formed, but also the very active and very visible role of women in the organization. So a lot of women found that they had a place in that movement where they could step up and make their voices heard and feel comfortable.
Were these themes and their intersections explicitly engaged? Like, was the education around the connections of these issues part of the formation of the participants for these actions? What do you recall about how that might have happened?
Well, if you go back and read the Declaration of Nuclear Resistance, which I believe was adopted in either 1976 or 1977 as a statement of the Clamshell Alliance, it is explicit, for example, about the connections between nuclear power and nuclear weapons. It is explicit about the idea that energy should not be exploited for private profit, but should be something that should be available for everybody in forms that are consistent with the needs to have a healthy environment. And certainly in the nonviolent training and discipline issues that had to do with equality of participation, with the ways that we need to work together without allowing some people, in a sense, to dominate and make decisions through democratic means. In fact, the whole organization attempted to make decisions through consensus, in a sense, kind of like the way that Quakers function, and being able to do that, again, over a very widespread geography. Now, that led to some problems, perhaps, to figure out how to do that in a movement that needs to make tactical adjustments in a short period of time in response to what its adversaries do. But it worked remarkably well for a long period of time.
Let's move on to another movement period that was also a pretty extraordinary learning and teaching opportunity about the intersection of issues, a variety of tactics, and relationship building for long-term work. So your involvement in the campaign, the long campaign to make Martin Luther King Day a state holiday. What do you want to share about that?
Well, the first legislation, Maggie, to make Dr. King's birthday a New Hampshire holiday was actually introduced by State Senator Jim Splaine in 1979, and it was defeated. And it was defeated repeatedly in the next sessions. In 1983, in the midst of a blizzard, I happened upon a Martin Luther King Day celebration in Manchester that was the first actual celebration of Martin Luther King Day in that city, and later developed relationships with people like Lionel Johnson from the local NAACP, and got involved in a more organized effort to get this legislation passed. And we didn't really get going until the federal government had adopted Dr. King's birthday as a holiday, and almost every other state in the country had done the same, but New Hampshire was a holdout. So we started to get organized by around 1987 or 1988, and I started to function as the communications coordinator, as we called it. So that involved internal communications of being in touch with all of the other individuals and groups in the state that wanted to be involved and needed to know what was going on, as well as external communications with the media, relations with members of the legislature, and a lot of education about why this holiday mattered so much.
And in the same case as with the Clamshell Alliance, relationships that you made in this work have developed partnerships and friendships for other activities. Is that true?
Well, again, I mean, I think if you look at Dr. King himself, if you look at the movement of that period, it involves a lot of what Reverend Barber these days would call moral fusion. And moral fusion movements are based on relationships with people across communities. And it might be people who have a major focus on different issues at this current time, but they understand the way their issues are connected to each other and the way our movements need to be interrelated, intersectional, and supportive of each other, so that you might have people who are involved in struggles for racial justice, but are also connected with people who are involved in anti-war activity, or people who are working to stop environmental calamities, or people who are engaged in labor struggles. And Dr. King certainly embodied that, and what he called the triple evils of racism, militarism, and poverty. He had different phrases he used at different times, but those were things that he tied together throughout his life, and he tied them together through campaigns that employed active nonviolence as a method that combined effective techniques with attention to the values of the world that we are trying to build. And to me, those are elements of why the holiday for Dr. King was and continues to be so important, that it's not primarily about commemorating important historical events from the 1950s and the 1960s, but it's really about who are we and what role are we going to take facing the challenges of the world that we live in the present.
And I know you want to share with us a song by your friend Lillian Buckley. Say something about that.
Well, just to say that we had lots of rallies and marches. And of course, again, as Charlie King would say, you can measure the health of a movement by the music that it employs and generates. And we were fortunate to have Reverend Lillian Buckley from Kittery, Maine, write this great song that we were able to sing along with at rallies for Martin Luther King Day. So let's listen to Lillian Buckley singing When in the Granite State.
Equality based on color was not mine.
She does, and she's now the pastor at the Red Brick Church, Red Brick Baptist Church in Exeter. So I'm sure you could hear her sing there probably every Sunday.
Well, great. Well, so this campaign was hardly the last thing that you did in terms of movement building for racial and social and economic justice in New Hampshire. Can you talk a little bit about some of the movement work you've done since then, and maybe in particular what you have seen as your role as an individual and what AFSC brings to that work that obviously involves many, many partners?
One of the things that's interesting, Maggie, again, especially from a State House Watch perspective, that being involved in a legislative campaign that went on for more than a decade to get Martin Luther King Day finally approved gave me a lot of exposure to the ways of the legislature. Mm-hmm, and while the American Friends Service Committee is not a conventional lobbying group, the fact that I did develop a lot of understanding of the rhythms and the nuances and the challenges of doing legislative work, when do you compromise and when do you just say no? Or what are all the different parliamentary tricks that can get played along the way that can keep you from getting what you need to get done, or that perhaps your friends use to get what you need to get done. But those were all ones that then eventually, as you and I developed the State House Watch project with our newsletter and our radio show, those were things that we were able to continue to help to share with other people. Or as we developed the New Hampshire Voices of Faith project and started to do additional trainings with people from the United Church of Christ and others to help people from the faith community learn how we can make our own values be brought to bear upon matters inside the halls of the legislature.
Yeah, I think what I have learned from you and certainly seen in your way of acting is that the technical knowledge and the process knowledge that you've acquired is in service to engagement, is in service to the advocacy by New Hampshire people so that their voices can be brought to bear on the policymaking that's happening there. So just want to lift that up.
I mean, certainly, again, the American Friends Service Committee bases its work on Quaker values, and Quakers believe that there's something sacred or there's a spark of the divine in every person so that every person's voice can matter, that none of us have all of the truth and everybody's got a piece of it. So part of what our organizing has been about is making it possible for people to share their voices and make their voices heard in pursuit of a more peaceful and more just world. And sometimes that's been at the legislature, and sometimes it's been in all sorts of other circumstances and movements and situations. And it's been of all ages and people from all parts of the state with whom we've been able to work. So for me, I count myself lucky. People often ask me, Maggie, how I was able to sustain my energy over all of these years. And what I've generally said was I spend my time with the people who are trying to do something rather than people who are just being cynical or people who are sitting it out. And that has certainly kept me enlivened in the process of bringing about change over all these years.
And you bring that mindset to the training and the educational workshops and helping to develop creative actions in response to particular needs or concerns. Anything you want to lift up about maybe some highlights from those aspects of the movement building work you've done?
Well, certainly we put a lot of attention into developing the leadership of young adults, and particularly young adults who were working with older teens, for example, and seen some of those people continue to be around and doing things. So that's been rewarding work. Dozens and dozens of trainings, whether in nonviolent action or what we call bird dogging. How do we take advantage, whether New Hampshire deserves or doesn't deserve its status as the state with the first in the nation presidential primary? We've got it. So when we've got all of these presidential candidates flooding through our state and we have access to them in a way that nobody else does, with the exception of people in Iowa, how do we make use of that to make sure that they hear from people who are concerned about matters like the threats posed by nuclear weapons or the rights and dignity of immigrants or the need for economic justice, for workers' rights, for an end to the privatization of our prison system, and on and on and on. So I've been able to train hundreds or perhaps thousands of people in techniques to be able to raise their voices at those moments, working with people like Olivia Zink, but also working with people in Iowa where they have the same type of process that goes on. And to see those techniques spreading around the country is in itself also something that's rewarding.
And of course, the skills that people develop for a particular project or campaign are then available to them and to the broader community for future moments of need, future movement moments. So I've heard you say before that if you bring people together in ways where they're building community, where they feel seen and valued, where they're building their own capacities, then beyond the specifics of that particular moment, you have built out a lasting capacity and spirit for whatever's coming next, and we're more able to respond to what's on the horizon.
So certainly in my reflective mode that I'm in now, looking back on the work, I can see a number of points in which that's taken place. Like, again, looking back to, for example, the rising up of an immigrant rights movement in New Hampshire around 2005 and 2006, and seeing some of the ways that expressed, for example, in efforts for dignity and equality and civil rights in the process of how people get driver's licenses. And that's a campaign that you are now carrying on through the Drive Safe New Hampshire project with some of the same people that were working on it at this point 15 years ago. How about that?
And with real leadership from immigrant community members who carry the stories of the urgency of that kind of policy change. It's not just theoretical. It affects people's lives.
That's right.
Well, you have suggested another musical number here by Woody Guthrie, I Guess I Planted. Do you want to say something about that song?
Well, it's, again, Woody wrote a lot of songs and a lot of poems, many of which were never recorded. Maybe they were just in his head. But years after his death, his daughter, Nora Guthrie, the caretaker of the Woody Guthrie archives, let Billy Bragg and the members of Wilco into the archives, and they took some of these poems and set them to music. Now, again, maybe Woody had the music in his head, but that's where it remained. So they took some of those and played some music. The reason I love this song called I Guess I Planted is it tells a story. Woody was in the Merchant Marine during the Second World War. And this is a story about organizing unions on the ships. And what's lovely about this song, Mag, is he talks about he talks about each of these little struggles on each ship is a little song, and that together they make up the big song. Now you think about Woody as the writer of This Land Is Your Land. If there was ever a big song, that's it. So to think about how our little stories, our little songs that lead up to the big ones, and our little movements, our little campaigns are parts of bigger stories. So that's what I love about this song. And it comes from a labor perspective, but it applies to so much more. The other song we'll play after this is a song written by John McCutcheon, but in this case performed by Rebel Voices. And it's the story of 3M workers in New Jersey being on strike and discovering that 3M workers in apartheid South Africa had gone out on strike in solidarity with them. So it's a reminder that accompaniment can go in all sorts of different directions, and that solidarity is something that can be expressed in lots of different ways, and that together we are much stronger when we're able to foster that and move it. So let's listen to Billy Bragg and Wilco doing I Guess I Planted, and then we'll hear the Rebel Voices.
I guess I planted some long ocean seed of a song with that inside me long ago. And now I can't remember when it was, but it joined up with the rest of them grow. It's such a little song, it don't compare with all your big ones you hear everywhere. But when it dawns, way in the back of your mind, the big ones are made up by the little kind. Union song, union battle, all added up, what is all what we got now. Union song, union battle, all added up, what is all what we got now. I can't even start to look around me here without hearing this song. Seeing all of us first separated, hurt apart and afraid, hungry for the union. So we kept on singing and working, fighting till we got it. Song, I guess I hear. Union song, union battle, all added up, one is all what we got now. Union song, union battle, all added up, one is all what we got now. There at your place, we fought there on your ship. Guess if you missed out on the fight for our union, you missed out on one of the big step our speaker took.
Meeting Daddy neath the 3M lights, and I'd ride up on his shoulders on those hot New Jersey nights.
always told when I got old how I would work there too. Now 20 years on the line, in 2 weeks' time, they're telling me I am through. Well, you don't have to tell me that times are bad and there's trouble all around. And I'm glad my daddy never lived to see what's happening to this town. But I turned on the news just this morning and it gave me chills to see some 3M workers in South Africa walking off of their jobs for me.
You gotta know when to move.
You gotta know when to move.
You gotta know when to stand.
You gotta know when to stand.
You gotta know when to
follow. When to take command.
You gotta take command.
You gotta know how to recognize your story when you hear it from just the other side of the railroad track or an ocean away from here.
Well, I've never been much for politics, and I've kept my nose real clean. But you know that just this morning I've been changed by what I've seen. Because people in the next town over, they don't seem to give a damn. While some folks living off in slavery risk their lives to take my stand.
You gotta know when to move.
You gotta know when to move.
You gotta know when to stand.
You gotta know when to stand.
You gotta know when to follow. When to take command.
You gotta take command.
You gotta know how to recognize your story when you hear it from just the other side of the railroad track or an ocean away from here. From the graveyards of Soweto to the freehold chimney stacks, there's chains upon the factory gates and there's chains upon their backs. But ain't it strange how people can change when they find they're not alone? It's gonna make you strong just to hear your song 10,000 miles from home.
You gotta know when to move.
You gotta know when to move.
You gotta know when to stand.
You gotta know when to stand.
You gotta know when to
follow. When to take command.
You gotta take command.
You gotta know how to recognize your story when you hear it from just the other side of the railroad track or an ocean away from here. From just the other side of the railroad track or an ocean away from here.
That was beautiful.
Rebel Voices doing a song by John McCutcheon, Know When to Move. And I just love that. You got to know how to recognize your story when you hear it, wherever it is. And that's part, I think, of the process of bringing about change. How do we identify with people in other places? How do we understand our own situations and struggles? And how do we find our own capacity to take action when it's necessary?
Yeah, beautiful. Well, in that theme, what last messages do you have for us right now about how we understand our work in these times? I mean, you're leaving your formal kind of professional organizing work in an extraordinary moment with multiple global, not only crises, but global movements for justice and peace. So what's on your heart to say?
Well, I mean, the perils right now are pretty extreme. But also the potential that we can see right now is quite enlivening and gives me hope for sure. But it does leave me, obviously, with a lot of anxiety. What I'm hopeful for, Maggie, is that as we rise to meet the challenges of the current time, we've got to find some specific short-term struggles to be involved with, whether it has to do with the next election or raising the minimum wage or whatever it is. But for whichever of these processes that we're involved with, changing police practices, getting driver's licenses for people, changing our nation's immigration laws, I mean, all of this, but both in order to be successful in those short-term struggles, but also to be able to keep going for the long-term, we've got to maintain what I think of as an over the horizon perspective, that there's a world that we're trying to create that we probably can't quite see yet what it is, although we might get glimpses of it. I think that's what Dr. King talked about when he said, I've been to the mountaintop and I've seen the promised land, where he talked about creating the beloved community. So I think we've got glimpses of that, although we don't really know what it is. And we need to hold it in our hearts and in our heads, even while we're engaged in the day-to-day struggles for change. And for me, the phrase, keep your eyes on the prize, is part of what captures that for me. And when I think of the song that we now know of as Eyes on the Prize, and it's a song that comes out of the African-American freedom movements, it's an adaptation of an earlier song, Keep Your Hand on the Plow, a song which was sung by people in slavery. And that song begins with references to the biblical story of Paul and Silas, who were in jail thousands of years earlier for a almost prehistoric act of civil disobedience, and who were released from jail in what we could think of as a miracle. So how do we do the work that's necessary to enable miracles to take place in our own time? And how do we draw on the wisdom and insights of all those generations of people who came before, who were involved in quest for liberation and quest for justice? And how do we adapt to the present time in order to meet the challenges of the moment and go forward? So that's why I love this song so much. And I love this version by Mavis Staples. So let's give that a listen.
Well, and let me say before you hit play on that, because that will be such a beautiful way to wrap up this interview, that I guess I just want to say that you are going to be so dearly missed. I mean, people truly love, I among them, love and admire you, not just because you're smart about processes and you have a long sense of the history and you know how to frame issues. You're a great comms person. you write the best press releases, but we'll miss you because you always show up in such an encouraging, cheerful, supportive way, whether it's with your camera or with the vests or with the permit, if a permit is required. So, you know, I know this work for you is lifelong, Arnie, but in the day to day, we're all kind of taking a deep breath and saying, thank you for what you've given us, and we're going to do our best.
Well, I really am. Do feel good about my decision and very excited about what happens next. I mean, I really do think getting out of the way is a good time for me to do that right now. So that's what I'm doing. Let's listen to Mavis.
Hold on.
Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
Been listening to State House Watch on WNHN LP in Concord, your source for progressive talk, jazz, blues, and music you won't find anywhere else. Visit WNHNFM.org for programming information and podcasts of all of our past shows. State House Watch Radio is done for the season, but there are lots of good reasons to tune in and to financially support this community radio station. Until we see you again, keep looking for the bright side.
there's a bright side somewhere. There's a bright side somewhere. I'm gonna rest until I find it. There's a bright side somewhere. There's more joy somewhere. There's more joy somewhere. I'm gonna rest until I find it. There's more joy somewhere. There's more love somewhere. There is more love somewhere. I'm gonna rest until I find it. There's more love somewhere. There's more peace somewhere. There's more peace somewhere. I'm gonna rest until I find it. There's more peace somewhere. Talk to me. Side somewhere, there's a bright side somewhere. I'm gonna rest down until I find it. There's a bright side somewhere. There's more joy somewhere. There's more joy somewhere. I'm gonna rest down. Find it, there's more joy somewhere.